as humans, generally assume that the person sitting next to us, seeing, hearing, and experiencing sensory input is pretty much the same, is doing it pretty much the same way that we are. But people experience sensory input differently. And in autistic people, this is sometimes affects the vocal and emotional functioning profoundly. Understanding how profound those differences are can lead us to a much greater understanding and connection with other humans, especially those who are extra different. Jennifer Myers has been writing and speaking about autism and related subjects professionally since 2006. Her special interest in this area is facilitating understanding and finding common ground between people with autism and people who lack it. Her inspiration in this has been her younger brother's autism diagnosis and her own diagnosis with Asperger's syndrome in 2002. Let us welcome Jennifer Myers.
Hi, John. Good morning, guys. Good to see you. First time I spoke at a big conference, the guy running it, who is a friend of mine, came up to me the night before and said, "Jennifer, are you sure you can talk for 90 minutes? I can talk all day. I will try to keep it to something reasonable, but I will be in there for as long as it takes to answer questions today." Now, the topic is sensory processing disorder. The problem is most people don't know what sensory processing is, so how can you tell if it's disordered? Sensory processing. Our brains do a ton of stuff. I'm getting technical. But our brains do huge amounts of work that we never know about. You assume we look at things, we hear things, we interact with things. The brain is processing all that. When you're over there during coffee hour, if you're talking to one person and there are people everywhere, but you're involved in that one conversation with that one person, you can suddenly look up and realize almost everyone is gone. And you go, "Ooh, how long were we talking?" Your eyes could see what was around you. Your peripheral vision still exists when you're in that conversation, but your brain allows you to shut out extraneous video and audio to a huge extent so that you have no conscious awareness that people are leaving until you suddenly notice things have changed. Another example of how sensory processing ideally works in humans is what, I don't know if it's still called this, cocktail party hearing. Does anybody know what that? Okay. The term cocktail party hearing comes back from ye olde Mad Men days. And it refers to a situation in which people are standing around talking while drinking alcohol and eating small things wrapped in other things. And, you know, it's a social world. It's people in a room talking. But you're having one conversation. You know there's a murmur of other voices, but you're having that one conversation with that one person, and you're not really aware of what the other conversations are until someone says your name. And you hear your name, and you instantly know what direction it came from. You look to that person. You could not have said what any conversation in that room was about other than your own, but you heard when someone mentioned your name because the unconscious processing your brain does for audio alerts you to important things like that. We live in a species, in a society, in which social awareness is important. You have to know who's talking about you. You have to know what they're saying. And you have to know whether they're volunteering you to chaperone the high school camping trip, because that's what they might be doing. There is that important need to be aware of how you are seen. And as Dale was saying, he gave us a little section on a guy with autism attending a UU church. Turns out if you don't have those filters, or they're working very poorly, and you're in there for coffee hour, it's very hard. It is very hard to hear what the person you are talking to is saying. It is, and a lot of people, the filters go a little less robustly. That the filters are a little less robust as you get older, so you have a little more effort. You're more aware that you're filtering out other things while you're talking to someone. But yet we have a huge amount of filtering done for us without us even noting, without us even caring about us, except if you have sensory processing disorder. Except if you're like me and a lot of people on the autism spectrum and your sensory processing isn't so hot. I do circulate during coffee hour. I do come here and do this whole social thing with you guys because you guys are cool. I'm not just kissing up to you. You're the most wonderful congregation in the world, bar none, and that is not pandering. I am just trying to get you to like me. I spend coffee hour working because to hear any one of you, I have to consciously shut out the other ones. I mean, people ask why people with autism aren't more social. I am not kidding. Sunday services are it for me. By the time coffee hour is done, I go home and collapse because it has taken everything I have. And I'm not saying that to make you feel sorry for me, because you shouldn't, because I'm awesome, but to let you know, when you are having to work at these things, when you have to consciously make your brain do that work, it takes a lot of effort. And sensory processing disorder means you are making that effort all day, every day. Sensory processing disorder affects a lot of kids, mostly kids with autism, but there are kids who just have sensory processing disorder. Their brain doesn't process at the same level as their intellect or age. See, I got diagnosed with autism or Asperger's in 2002. Now it's awesome, autism spectrum. They keep changing the names. I have Asperger's. And I read about book about sensory processing disorder. And it was a really boring book about sensory processing disorder. It was full of checklists for teachers to evaluate students and all that stuff about working with, you know, it was aimed at somebody working with six-year-olds who needed to have a lot of paperwork to demonstrate that this kid needed to be evaluated for sensory processing disorder. Oh, my gosh, books for teachers are mind-numbing. I don't know how teachers keep up with stuff because it changed my life. Because what it told me was not everybody sees the same way. Not everybody hears the same way. Not everybody processes information their body gives them the same way. Now, that should be obvious. We should be aware that every single person is receiving different information and perceiving things in different ways. But that's not how we tend to act. We tend to act like other people have the same stuff we have. Which is what I did. I had no idea people couldn't hear the things I could hear. I can hear stuff you would not believe. It's really inconvenient because I won't know what someone is saying if they're whispering to me because I can't make it out, but I can hear a lost kitten at a quarter mile. I kid you not. And if you don't think that's a pain, you have not had to call every rescue in the world trying to get that kitten a slot at PetSmart so it can get adopted. How many times do I do that, Gary? Gary says, you know, I can hear the animal in distress from a long distance. Gary has told people, it's a little odd to come home and have your wife say, don't go in your bathroom, there's a dog in there right now. I didn't know other people couldn't hear that. I thought other people were heartless. I thought people were awful because there was a sound of an animal in distress that was absolutely clear to hear, and I was the only one there. But it changed my life more than that. Understanding that other people weren't sensing what I was sensing made my view of the human race completely different, and the reason is the mall. Have you been to the mall? Think about it. We have kids who hear too much, who see everything. Their brains aren't filtering any of what's coming in, and they could be hypersensitive. They can be sensitive to every little thing, or they can be hyposensitive. Nothing's getting through in any meaningful way. I'm hypersensitive a lot of the time. And I went to the mall every Saturday because I had read an article in the 80s that said the mall is the new town square. The mall is the social and cultural heartbeat of our society now. It is fulfilling X role. And being me, a nerd, I went, oh, I'd better go to the mall. Obviously, the reason I can't socialize better is I haven't gone to the mall enough. So I would go to the mall every Saturday morning. Every Saturday morning, I would save up errands. If I needed a birthday card, if I needed socks, if I needed to get shoes mended, I would wait till Saturday so I could go to the mall and be part of the heartbeat of America. I think coffee places are now the social center, but for a while it was the mall. And I'm walking around the mall. Don't know if you've spent much time in a mall. Back in ye olden days, people used to actually spritz perfume in the air right before you walked past so you would smell it as you walked through. It took a while for the department stores to realize this was not a good idea. Because there's nothing like somebody spritzing perfume right in front of you, and as you walk through it, they say, enchantment. Because that's the name. Yeah. Oh, that's good. There's that, and stores pump scent into the air. Seriously, you're not just smelling what's cooking in the food court. There are scents being pumped into the air to make you want to eat stuff. And they put Cinnabon next to hot dog on a stick. Every time, I swear, it's uncanny. And every shop is trying to get your attention. Everything is designed to draw your eye, to get your brain alerted. My brain would be so alert, I'd be in a panic mode. Because these kids with sensory processing disorder like me have a problem, which is if your sensory input isn't quite right, it only makes sense for your brain to alert you too often rather than not enough. It's just survival. If there's too much different input, if something's obviously going on, the safe thing for your brain to do is to tell you you are in an emergency and have to be alert and to pump adrenaline through you like crazy, which is why I deal with six-year-olds who are having panic attacks on the playground because someone came up and tapped them on the shoulder and they didn't see it coming. The mall has all that. The mall has little kids running around your legs, and they smell funny, and they're sticky. They don't have to touch you, and you can still feel that they're sticky. And there's people, and there's conversations, and everybody's going different directions, and there's no organization. Okay, here's the rule, people. We walk on the right-hand side and let people walk the other way across. We do not walk around like this. We are not zigzagging and looping. No, that's not how it's supposed to work, people. Get with it. Of course, if you're in England, you have to walk on the left side, but that's a whole other thing. I would get to the mall, I would do my errands, and the whole time I was there, why are people like this? Why do people dart around me? Why do people let their children randomly move? Why? And I'm there going, and I'm serious. My self-talk at the mall, there's two things I keep telling myself. You will not hit other people's kids. You will not hit other people's kids. You will not hit other. The other is just plain, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not kill. Hey, being raised evangelical is good for something. And I read about sensory processing disorder. I read this wonderful book that talked about how some people are almost immune to all that input and don't really have any awareness of it, and how other people are overwhelmed because their brain doesn't filter it. Picking out one thing in a visual field like that is not possible for me. Filtering the audio doesn't happen. So I went to myself, maybe the mall is not a good place for me. I also thought to myself, maybe those people aren't all, you know, dicks. Maybe those people are okay. They don't know what they're doing to me. The stores don't realize they're hurting me. The people walking around, they're just browsing. They're not trying to be jerks. So I suddenly realized that maybe the world was not as nasty and mean a place as I thought it was. And I suddenly realized the human race had some good points. They talk about people with autism having difficulty socializing. It is really hard to develop social skills when the whole world seems intent on causing you pain. When I realized nobody was trying to do it, they were just wandering around functioning the way they function, it was such a huge relief. All of a sudden, the world was full of people whose actions weren't purposely hurtful. It is important to be able to see the other side. Because I had the same problem. People would think my actions were random and hurtful because they didn't know that if somebody just comes and puts their hand on my shoulder, I'm in a panic attack immediately. I have adrenaline like somebody is trying to drag me into an alley. And therefore I go, why did you do that? Why would you do this to me? What? How? And other people are like, what? I just tapped you on the shoulder. And they thought, man, Jen goes off over everything. And I'm thinking, how could they do something that they knew would freak me out? No. They didn't know they would freak me out. And I needed to let them know, okay, I can't cope with that. Give me a minute. Because if I can calm down for a minute, then we can have that conversation. Oh, wait. Stop going to the mall. Like I said, I stopped going to the mall. I started doing standalone stores. I started doing more online stuff when that came out. Ooh, magical interwebs. I love the internet. I hate the internet. There's nothing like downloading a sample of an ebook and at the end it says, would you like to keep reading? Push pay. Oh my. Dangerous stuff. So there are disadvantages to the online world too, the electronic world. Okay, it wasn't till maybe a couple months after I stopped going to the mall altogether that Gary pointed something. This is Gary. He's married to me. He's a saint. I put up with a lot of puns because he's a saint. Gary said to me, you know, we haven't had a fight on a weekend since you stopped going to the mall. And he was right. All that time before the coming of information, when I was going to the mall every weekend, I thought there were problems with me and problems in our marriage because I would get angry every weekend. And I'd read enough women's magazines and pop psychology books to know if I fly off the handle over some small thing, that means there is a deeper problem that I need to get to the bottom of. Remember that? If you're losing it over a small thing, it means there are deep, deep problems that you weren't dealing with. And so I was determined to get to it. I was determined to talk it out, argue it out, work it out, because we have to deal with this. And I stopped going to the mall, and all of a sudden I was okay with Gary every weekend. And he did not change his behavior. He was just as annoying. He does the dishes completely wrong, by which I mean he does them slightly differently than I do. I mean, he has a... Sorry to have to say this about you in public, Gary, but he has occasionally put the toilet paper on the roll so it goes under instead of over. Oh, my gosh. I don't know how I'm supposed to cope with that. The Ladies' Home Journal did not prepare me. Realizing, okay, if I'm not primed for all this anger, for all this pain, pain causes anger, period. That's how it works. I don't lose it at Gary because for some reason I can now tolerate him. And I can tolerate my husband. I can tolerate my husband. This is big stuff. Do you know how many people can't do that? Do you read Dear Abby? Oh my gosh. And here's the thing. I'd always had these problems with filtering. I'd always had the problem where being on a playground full of children was torture. I'd always had the problem that I wasn't getting all the data. And I was known as an angry, angry child. I was considered to have a terrible temper by the time I was 3. I was considered to have anger issues. My first psychiatrist was a Freudian, for heaven's sake, and oh my gosh, did I have deep problematic issues. Plus, for some reason, she diagnosed me with an Elektra complex. Because, you know, psychiatrists who are still Freudians are so much fun. I had spent an entire lifetime defining myself as someone with an anger problem, with some deep, horrible psychological issue that was driving me to rage over and over and over. And what I found out was, I'm perceiving the world differently and therefore experiencing pain other people aren't experiencing. And therefore, in addition, I can't understand people's actions because they don't think what they're doing is a cause of pain. Once I knew that, I changed who I was. And here's the thing. This is what kids are going through who have sensory processing issues. This is what happens when you genuinely can't tolerate most foods because your taste buds and the tactile sense in your mouth won't let you. And these kids are stubborn and difficult and get in trouble. And when you're constantly being punished for the fact that you can't take enough pain, you get angry. And these kids are I was a behavioral problem. Jennifer does not work up to expectations. Jennifer does not behave with the maturity we expect from her. Jennifer is an underachiever. Underachiever means we haven't figured this kid out. It is a way of saying something's wrong with this kid, and we're going to blame it on the kid. And sometimes you do need a label for we can't figure out this kid, but it was all on me, and I bought it hook, line, and sinker. Being raised evangelical Christian was fine with me because I felt guilty constantly, and I felt like I was a horrible person constantly because I just couldn't do what other people did. I couldn't understand what they understood. Oh, man, I completely lost my thread. That's okay. Now, I don't have a lot of time left, but now that I've told you about me and therefore dealt with the more fascinating part of the presentation, I'm going to tell you a little bit about what sensory processing disorder actually is. Okay, sensory processing disorder. Sensory processing is disordered. And it has to be disordered enough to be a problem. Everybody has bad moments. Everybody has bad days. Sensory processing disorder, or SPD, as the cool kids call it, is persistent and problematic. Any sense can be processed incorrectly in the brain to a different extent. All the senses. All 8 sensory systems. And yes, it turns out there are 8 sensory systems. The reason we only deal with 5 is because those are the ones you would normally have any reason to know anything about. The reason I'm mentioning this is because there are people walking around with 3 systems that can be severely disordered and no one sees what's going on because nobody ever thinks about the vestibular sense, which is the jargon makes me crazy. It's called the vestibular sense. It's the gravity sense. It's your sense of gravity. It's your sense of where your body is in relationship to the earth. The vestibular, because there's something called the vestibule in the ear. It's the vestibular labyrinth. There's a lot of funky little stuff in your ear. You would not believe it is. I've looked at pictures and, oh my gosh, there's a little tiny area that has some liquid in it and some little delicate hairs. And it's like a level. It lets you know where you're. And that little part of your ear has to send information to your brain about if you're leaning over, if you're leaning forward, if you're hanging upside down. And guess what? If your brain can't process that, you can be leaning over and have no idea that you're going to fall if you don't straighten yourself up. I have a friend who works with these kids, and she said, I had a kid. I put him on a balance ball to help him exercise his ability to use that inner ear, and he started tilting, and I said, you're falling. And he said, I know, but which way? He couldn't correct because he didn't know which part to do. Okay, do I move this part of my body? Do I move this part of my body? What bit of me do I have to shift? We've also got something called, and I kid you not, the jargon drives me crazy, proprioception. You never have to hear that word again as long as you live, unless you buy my book, which you definitely want to do. But even in my book, I toss it aside and say, okay, this is the muscle sense. Muscles and joints stretching and contracting send information to your brain. When you pick something up, how your brain knows whether it's too heavy for you or very light and how much effort to put into it is the muscle sense. Your muscles are constantly giving cool feedback to your brain. Well, think about it. We all know kids have trouble developing the muscle sense because we have all given a glass of juice to a small child, and it's a paper cup, and they have to figure out how hard to hold it. Because if you contract your muscles too much, you crush it and it goes everywhere. And if you expand your muscles too much, it'll fall on the ground. I mean, no one in the right mind gives a four-year-old a full cup of juice because we know they're going to be struggling. They have to coordinate their sense of balance, their sense of gravity, and their muscle senses all together to get that across the room. And just so you know, if you're the kid who's late to the party on that one, it entertains the heck out of the other kids, so they will do everything they can to get more entertainment out of you. The kid who can't walk across the classroom with a cup of macaroni that they're supposed to glue to something because for some reason in grade school it's very important to glue macaroni to stuff, I don't know. But they have, or paint, or whatever, and he can't make it across the room without going and trying very hard to figure out how not to fall over, there is going to be a kid who's going to shout at him, "Hey, Timmy!" And Timmy loses it. And everybody else gets a break, except for the few people who help the teacher clean it up and get brownie points. I always tried for the brownie points, but I was so often the source of the problem that it didn't really work out for me. Well, no, because if you're in a classroom full of kids and it's 15 minutes till recess and you are tired of everything and you can get tons of entertainment plus a break where you don't have to deal with anything at all just by calling a kid's name and watching them make a mess, you're going to do it. I mean, I realize a lot of the kids I grew up with weren't awful and they weren't so much attacking me as they were bored and cranky and restless and they just wanted something to happen that wasn't part of the routine. They wanted 5 minutes off while the teacher had to do something else. That's important because these kids get tortured by other kids who aren't so much trying to torture them as they're just, hey, let's do this. Because, hey, you're 7. You're not necessarily thinking everything out. You're not thinking, how will this affect the motor skill development and psychological well-being of this person? No, you're thinking, cool! I get a break. So we've got gravity sense, we've got muscular sense. We've also got something called the interoceptive system in your body. This can also be off. This is another word, interoceptive. I don't care if you ever know or hear that word again. I call it your basic body sense. It is very important to understand that there are people on this earth whose basic body sense is off. It will save you a world of pain if you realize that sense is not the same in everybody. And when I say basic body sense, what I mean is your sense of how your body is. Am I hot? Am I cold? Am I hungry? Do I need to use the toilet? Do I need to drink water? What do I need? Your sense of pain, sense of, oh, I have a stomach ache. Oh, I'm sleepy. All that information is something your brain has to get from your body into your conscious mind. I can't tell when I'm thirsty. I genuinely can't. I drink water all day because I know I can't tell when I'm thirsty and I will get to the point where I can't function. And I will be angry and I will be starving. Because, oh, here's the fun thing. If those senses are tangled up, if I'm sleepy, to the point of exhaustion even, or if I'm thirsty, I feel hungry. I have had to consciously learn, if I am hungry, to think, okay, how much sleep am I going on? Have I had any water? How hot is it? Am I perspiring? Do I need more water? Because otherwise, I will just eat everything. And trust me, if you get sleepy enough and you get thirsty enough, you can go through, I'm sorry, Oreos only come in single serving bags. Whatever size it is, that's a single serving. So you have kids who can't tell they're getting overheated. You get kids who don't take their coats off. It's chilly in the morning, you put a jacket on them, it gets up really hot, and they're still in their jacket because they don't know that their body needs to be cooled. You get kids who don't wear adequate clothing, kids who get frostbite because they didn't know they were getting frostbite. They're not getting that kind of feedback. What's really bad is kids who don't get hungry. And thank heavens this does happen. There is a subset of kids in autism who don't have the instinct to eat, and that is, I've watched parents go through that. It is not pretty. Because think about it. There is no logical reason to assume that discomfort somewhere in your trunk means that you should put things in your mouth, mash it up with your teeth, and swallow it, and somehow doing stuff here will make this part of your body feel better. It has to be in your brain. It has to be hardwired because it's so weird. And so we get kids who don't want to eat. And logically, there's no reason. I mean, okay, so you pulled some roots out of the ground and pulled some milk out of a cow, and I'm supposed to put that in my mouth. Wait, you pulled stuff out of a cow's udder, and I'm supposed to drink that? What? You pulled a root, literally pulled a root out of the ground, and that's what I'm supposed to put in my personal mouth. It's not intuitive. We all think these things are easy and natural because for a huge part of the population they are. But if, when you look at other people, you realize their input and their instincts could possibly be completely different than yours, it is easier to deal with people who disagree with you, who have bad habits, who can't get away from things. It prevents you from dehumanizing people. And I'm lucky. I grew up in a family where everyone was like this, and I kid you not. I was, in my family, my brother was tactile aversive. You touch him and he pulled away when he was born. Normal babies went cuddle, 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 and he was like, nope. And my mom said, oh, he's like Nana. Okay, we're good. We now know how to handle him. I got time for this one story. I had a full-blooded Italian-American grandmother. Her parents were from Italy. They came from Italy to the United States to make a life for their kids. That's how Italian she was, an Italian grandmother. She couldn't stand to touch anyone. I had the world's only Italian grandmother who did not hug. She didn't touch people at all if she could help it. She had this way of hugging where she would put out her arms so that her forearms would block you. It was like this, so that you couldn't possibly touch her. This is a woman who loved her family. When my dad went to Catholic school, when he started school, the nun hit him the first day, and my Nana went in there and chewed a nun out. Because the church is one thing. You touched my kid. She would have died for her children. She never hugged one of them, ever. She also could barely stand to eat. I had an Italian grandmother who didn't like food and didn't like hugging. And in my family, that's how Nana is. And so when my brother had problems, it was, oh, that's how Jimmy is. It's easier to cope with if you've seen it before. Now, I should tell you, the universe did make things right. My Uncle Jim met a wonderful guy named Herb, another full-blooded Italian-American who is a professional chef and who is the best hugger in the world. And my feeling is the universe saw that I didn't have an Italian grandmother, so it gave me an Italian grandmother in another form. But growing up in that, it was a little harder for me to realize other people don't get it. It's hard for these kids. You may find this hard to believe, but I was a smart kid. I don't know what happened between then and now. I was so much smarter when I was 11 than I am now. But here's the thing. I never figured it out. It never, ever occurred to me that I was getting different sensory input. because it's almost impossible to grasp that what's going on in someone else's brain, what they're seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, smelling, is so different from yours that their behavior is necessarily going to be strange to you. We have kids who have this. We have adults who have this, and no one has bothered to tell them. I've talked with a lot of families of kids with autism, and one of their problems is getting their kids to stop announcing how disgusting other people's food is. Because they're looking, they're going, how can you eat that? And no one has told them, oh, by the way, your sensory systems are different than everybody else's. You got to let them do their thing. I got lucky. I got politeness pounded into me, but I didn't get made to, okay, they occasionally tried to make me eat food I didn't like. My mom didn't like that I was on a very narrow diet. Basically, I'm no good at being a vegetarian. That is the one, I'm the only person who I know who, when I went on a vegetarian diet, I would drive by and see cows in the pasture and think, oh man, those are delicious. Most people don't have that Bugs Bunny moment where the bird turns into a roast chicken right in front of you. I had. But my parents tolerated me being weird. My parents let me work around. And when I found out what was actually going on that was underneath that, I learned a lot more workarounds. The more you understand that other people are working with different information than you are, the more you can tolerate yourself and others. And I really feel tolerance is an important step toward loving humans and helping and supporting them and changing into a person who would come here and join the church. Changing into a person who really wants to help other people. I think if we look at things from other people's point of view more, we can just actually be better people and not be quite so cranky. And I will be more than willing to entertain any and all questions after the service in there. And you want to buy my book. Because today only, it's a $20 purchase, $5 from everyone goes to UUCF. But even if you sadly don't want to buy my book, please remember, seeing it from the other guy's side makes a real difference. Thank you.